and welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Pardon me, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. All right, I'm not going to try that again. I'm just going to forge ahead by telling you that we're here Monday through Friday, but Saturdays from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We're streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com, and we are available via archives. They call them podcasts, archives, pre-recorded programs, but they're up on the website at richarddugan.com. You can listen to this program and any other programs just by going to richarddugan.com and clicking on the radio shows page, and there they are. And today's program will be listed up there following the broadcast after 4 p.m. Pacific time. Today in studio, we have a very beautiful woman who has a great story to tell about adversity, having to do with all of our, we all face the same kinds of challenges. Title of the book is The 10 Things to Do When Your Life Falls Apart. Some would say it goes to hell in a handbasket. We could come up with all kinds of other phrases. Daphne Kingma, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
I have to say that in looking at and reading your book and going through the information that's provided as far as trying to help us through, I'm thinking, well, I've done that. I didn't do that. Every time, shall we say, traumatic events happen in our lives that turn our apple cart over on its side, another one of those euphemisms, sometimes it's as if we're having to relearn the same lesson over and over again. Many years ago, I was reading through this magazine, and I came across these brain teasers. And the first one had to do with letters. The second one had to do with numbers. And I solved the first one. To me, it was real easy. And I threw away the answer. I said, okay, found the answer to question one. I go to question two, and I am stumped.
Huh.
The same answer for question one worked for question two. We do that on a pretty regular basis, don't we? What is it that doesn't allow us to have that lesson sink in so that we've learned it, and if our apple cart gets knocked over again, we can go back to that and say, I made it through the first time. I'm going to make it through this time, instead of going, oh my God, I'm not going to make it through.
Well, there's something about each experience that brings its own, you know, brand new challenge, and it always paralyzes us in some way. It's like the energy of crisis is so profound that it really stops us in our tracks. And so instead of remembering I've been through this or I have capabilities, we're really frozen in the experience. And of course, as you know, as we all know, when you go through a difficult time, it's like the emotions that come rushing in are so intense that you're just inundated. You're not in a reflective mood to say, well, let me see, I've gone through this a whole bunch of times before, and of course I'll be just right, because there are earmarks of each circumstance that are different. That's one thing. And again, it's just this incredible emotional output that's so overwhelming.
Is it like when the emotions kick in, this wall or a shield goes up around our memories and it doesn't allow us to access them or something?
That's a great way of saying it, Richard. I mean, I think it's almost like when you were talking, I got this image of, you know, just because you go in the ocean and you know how to swim, if you get knocked over by a wave once, that doesn't mean that if you go swimming again, you won't get knocked over by a wave again. And the experience of the first wave, you know, may have happened years before, and a lot of life has intervened and you've been engaged with your new experience. And so I think it's also true, actually, on a spiritual level, that we go through these things because we're being asked to learn something new each time. It's not just go back to the coping mechanism of before or the lesson that you learned before, but each lesson, or I'm sort of sick of that word lesson, but each experience, that's an overused word.
I hear you.
Each experience is asking us to, you know, evolve in some way, to draw on something that progresses us as a human being. And so if there weren't that edge of discovery, if there weren't that edge of pushing forward, we wouldn't have to go through the experience.
And maybe another part of it is that even if we don't remember that we made it through the last time, maybe there's some other nuance.
Yes, exactly. There's some other nuance of the experience that is inviting us to connect with some other nuance of ourselves.
And the example that I was giving you before we came on the air of my wife and I 4 years ago when we decided to move here, we didn't go into the fear and the emotional upheaval for some very interesting reasons. And I've actually given up the need to know why.
Mm.
The fact is, that's what happened. We faced it very calmly, very coolly, and here we are.
That's beautiful. I mean, it sounds like you were drawing on some strengths in yourself that you did have, if not a conscious specific memory of, you just had an intuitive memory. There's this stuff in ourselves that we can call on at this moment, and mm-hmm. it will carry us through.
I know that at your book that we're talking about today, the 10 things to do, obviously, there are a lot of things, but I would think that these are major categories that a lot of little things would fall under, and we want to get into those as we
yes.
continue in our program. My guest is Daphne Kingma. She's the author of The 10 Things to Do When Your Life Falls Apart, an emotional and spiritual handbook, and we encourage you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share, a talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Emilio's at the Beach and Bar de Isabella proudly introduce Lower Prices. Now, indulge yourself, your family, and friends with delicious starters for just $10, pastas and flatbreads just $15, and superb main courses $20. Emilio's owner, Michael De Paola, thinks you shouldn't have to give up fine dining. Call 966-4426, 966-4426, or visit emiliosrestaurant.com. Emilio's at the Beach and Bar de Isabella, 324 West Cabrillo Boulevard in Santa Barbara.
When it comes to shopping, it's all about finding the perfect deal. Well, starting May 1st, you can find it in the U.S. Virgin Islands. Save $1,500 on a trip to the USVI with our Shop to You Rock promotion when you book by July 17th. You get shopping and dining certificates, free concert passes, a fifth night free, a VIP welcome shopping bag, a shopping shuttle service, and more. It's a shopping spree in paradise. Book now at Travelocity.com/USVI. Go to visitusvi.com to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Falling back, a flooding river. Keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts you.
It haunts me too.
Yes, and I do know how you feel. Oh, come on, walk with me.
Tell Me Your Story is the program. I'm Richard Dugan. I'm your host, and my guest is Daphne Kingman. She is the author of The 10 Things to Do When Your Life Falls Apart, and many times in our lives, we feel like that's exactly what's happening. Our life is falling apart, and we just don't know what to do. We discussed as we began the first segment about emotion.
Yes.
What is a key that we can use, one of these 10 things, to somehow get a hold, either use the emotion to get centered, if that's even possible, or push the emotion aside for the time being?
Well, actually, both of those things are necessary in some order, Richard. And the emotion that I begin with in the book, and in fact, the first of the 10 things is I say to people, give yourself permission to cry your heart out. I use that kind of hyperbole because I think so many times when we're in difficult situations, instead of giving permission for that, it's like, okay, we got to keep it together. We got to keep a stiff upper lip. We can't go into the emotional realm. And yet, it's very important to do that because the emotional process is one of cleansing and balancing. And people often get scared, oh my God, if I start crying, I'll never stop. That's something I hear over and over and over, especially from men. But the truth is that this is a function of our being. It's an emotional function of our being. It's an organic function. And once, you know, when you're scared, it's appropriate to cry. When you've experienced loss, it's appropriate to cry. When we go through this process of grieving and relieving, we actually then can connect with that in ourselves, which can say, okay, I've had my feelings. Now what do I need to address in the reality of the situation?
Right. Now, there are different circumstances under which you can do that, and then there are others where you don't have the time. For example, when I was working my very first job in radio, my general manager used to tell me time and time again, if you ever feel the need to panic, don't panic yet. Go ahead and take care of whatever needs to be taken care of, and then go in the corner, and if you need to make a puddle, make a puddle.
That's great advice.
But if you have a fire racing up the hill at you, you don't really have that kind of time. The emotions certainly are raging, and even the panic may even set in, but you have got to find some place of center to get control, to take care of what you need to get yourself and your family safe. Then you can sort of go in the corner and...
That's absolutely right, and I want to make clear that these 10 things are not necessarily in any chronological order in the moment of crisis, because you're right. Sometimes you do just have to address the situation. You have to call on yourself to get a hold of some behaviors that will carry you through the moment, and then you can have the feelings afterward. But it is true that we've got to deal with these situations on a practical level and an emotional level, and I believe a spiritual level too, because otherwise we never feel resolved about them, because we are all of those things. And I have found recently, particularly even more than in the past, I've always done emotional work with people, but I find people seem to be having a harder time dealing with their emotions than they used to. And I don't know if that's because we're so in this, you know, instant everything, virtual everything culture that people feel like there's a way to get through things without really, you know, stopping at the emotional hot dog stand, you know? And so it just seems that that's something that we need to be reminded of, you know, that grief or expressing feelings is also a part of this process, a legitimate part of it, a healing part of it, a necessary part of it.
I remember hearing a marriage counselor in a talk to an audience talk about a situation that he was in where he was counseling this couple, and the wife was just, you know, bashing the husband left and right. And finally the counselor says, stop it, stop it. Don't you see what's going on? And she says, look at him, look at him. And the guy was literally just in tears.
Mm.
Just, you know, and you mentioned too that men seem to have more difficulty. Is that still because of the way that they're raised as boys not to cry? Big boys
yes.
don't cry?
I mean, I think it's a little more relaxed now with some of the young men that are growing up, but it's very much, well, I haven't been a man lately, you tell me. it's very much.
Well, in your experience in counseling.
Well, actually, I wrote a book about men, and I have done a great deal of work with men. And you know, it is part of the male tradition, and it is part of the male burden to be able to set emotions aside, just like you described your boss saying to you, hey, it's like you can't just, you know, go for the puddle right now. You got things to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, men are really trained to be the ones to solve the problem and carry the burden and see that, you know, the solution arises. And so that permission for the emotional territory is not nearly as strong for men. And yet it is an important part of the sequence of getting through a difficult time. Sometimes after the problem is solved, there's an old joke about a guy who got stranded out in the middle of the lake fishing, and you know, it was dark, and he was afraid he couldn't get in, and all the people on land held the, you know, the lanterns for him, and he sort of walked on these ice floes across the frozen lake and made it to the shore. And then the people were there, and they put their arms around him and said, "Wow, it's really amazing you made that. The ice was only a quarter of an inch thick." And then he started weeping. You know, it's like, okay, I made it, and now I can have the I can have the breakdown. Now I can have the release.
When my wife and I were in Ireland, we were on one of the islands to the west, and they had this large fort, this granite fort, prehistoric. And there was this large slab of granite that hung out over the edge of the cliff. Now, at the time, I had no clue as to I knew it was sheer and sheer drop off and so forth. And you could see the water, and we were looking at the Atlantic Ocean. And I got out there, and I sat down on the edge of that granite, and I took pictures, and there was absolutely no fear. Utterly fearless. I was having the time of my life. And, of course, my wife was back 20, 30 feet going, "And where is the insurance policy?" But it wasn't until we made it back down the hill and back to the town, and there was a small little gift shop. And we were in there looking around, and I looked back behind the counter, and from floor to ceiling, there was this giant mural. And the mural was of that cliff from the other side. In other words, a helicopter had taken a picture from out over the ocean. And it was at that moment that I'd realized where I was. Now, still, I wasn't overly concerned. 8 hours later, I'm laying in bed, safe and warm, inside a stone cottage. I was scared out of my mind. And I thought, what is this about? We have those time delays too.
Yes, absolutely. We don't know when the emotional component is going to hit. And the message here really is that when it hits, you know, if it isn't that moment when you have to keep it together to, you know, hold the world together and not panic, but when it hits, allow it to pass through you, because that's part of our human experience. And it allows us to see who we are, and it allows us to be feeling, and it allows us to connect with our depth, you know, and to connect with other people in that stripe of experience that is our emotions. So that's a very illustrative story that you tell. And also, I think about it's we're spending some time on crying, and I think it's really important, because that fear that I mentioned that people have, you know, "I'll never stop," it's really an organic process to trust your body, trust your psyche to go through it. And a man I was working with recently told me about when he went through the end of his relationship. He said, "I was such a wreck. I'd come home every day at 5 o'clock, and I'd take out the old photographs, and I'd just sit in the middle of the living room floor and, you know, bawl my head out and think about all the things that were done and all the things I was going to miss." And he said, "And one day I came home after work and I took out the box of photographs and I just couldn't cry anymore. I was bored." You know, and I thought that was a very powerful, illustrative tale of when you're done, you're done. You know, it's like if you allow yourself to go through it, it will find its natural completion, and you'll, you know, go on to taking action, go on to being creative, go on to whatever is required next.
One of the goals of this program is to share with people different ways of living and loving and learning and trying to move forward to fulfill the dreams, their heart's desire, their passion, and so forth. A lot of what we go through holds us back, and sometimes we'll go through those traumas, certain traumas, and we'll emote, and we'll go through what we need to, and we're through it.
Yes.
Other times we'll go through, and we'll hang on for days, weeks, months, years, and then suddenly a switch will be flipped, and, oh, I can move forward now.
Yes. Yes, it's very mysterious. It's very mysterious how that happens.
What, and most people don't write books about these kinds of things without having some kind of personal experience.
I've been through my turns.
I was going to ask you, what kind of falling apart experiences have you had that have helped bring about this book?
Well, it's really interesting. This book was really in response to a dear suffering friend of mine who friend from Europe who came here saying, you know, my wife just left me. I've just had to move out of my place. I've had to move twice in 6 months. I just lost my job. I've just been diagnosed with a progressive illness. So as we were walking one day, he said to me, Daphne, before I go home, can you tell me the 10 things I need to do to get through all this? So he was the momentary inspiration. I remember hearing that and thinking, oh boy, this is going to be a book to write. I can feel it. I can feel a book coming on. But the truth is that two things. One is that the writing of this book became quite a crisis in itself.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that happened because in order to write freshly of these feelings and this reality, it wasn't like I was supposed to be some bag of hot air sitting on the hill and telling everybody how it is. I needed to have some fresh experience. And for example, as I set out to write it, I went to Maui where I've written often. I was exhausted when I went there. I had my computer, my book outline. I, you know, spent a quiet evening, thought, okay, I'm going to get rested, then I'll get to work tomorrow. And I got up the next morning and my computer and the entire book outline had been stolen. And the outline was on paper, old-fashioned paper written by hand, so it wasn't something that I had on a flash drive. So I was like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to get to experience this. And there were many other very challenging things that happened with the writing of the book along, you know, a quarter of the way, half of the way, three quarters of the way, et cetera, et cetera. And I won't go into all of those, but it was a very, you know, timely experience of, okay, lady, how are you going to deal with this challenge? Are these things true that you're mm-hmm. stating are true? How are they operating in your own life? But I certainly have been through seasons of challenge, and a big one, which I did not write about in this book, was a time when I had decided to take a year off. And 3 weeks into that year, I came back from a meditation retreat, and my house had burned practically to the ground. And so rather than having a time out, you know, come Monday morning, basically I was a building contractor. And during that time, I went away to kind of regroup and gather my strength to pull this all off. And I went to visit a friend. I was there 3 hours. We were in a major car accident that totaled his car. I came back. Two trees fell on my house, and I was visiting a friend when it was during the time of the very bad storms here. And I went to visit another friend one night, and I came out in the roaring rain, and a huge tree had fallen on my car, smashed my car. So all these things kept happening one after another, and it was really, you know, one of those sequence of challenges that say, okay, you know, your cup is already full and flowing over. Are you going to be able to deal with this one? What are you going to bring to this situation? Are you going to be able to keep your equanimity? And so I think that sequence, you know, the things that happened during that sequence, I think were right up there in the annals of my own personal crisis, you know. So, I got a lot out of that.
I was going to say, some would even say that Mercury must have been in retrograde that period
of time. It was very...
one thing after another,
and,
wow.
You know, one of the things that I observe with the people that I work with, and I'm sure you have too, is that when we go through these amazingly challenging things that just like reach down to the core of us, there's always some profound gift that comes out of it,
yeah.
You know, and you don't see that when you're going through the process. You just feel the process. You feel the arduousness of it. You feel the discouragement. You feel the grief. You feel the panic, like, am I really going to be able to pull this off? And so, you know, it's like it's not really very helpful when people say, sometimes it's a little bit helpful, but this too will pass, or you're going to get a great gift out. Nobody wants to hear that,
no.
Because when you're slogging through it, you can't hear it.
Yeah.
You cannot, because you're not in the piece of experience that can show that to you. And that's why I loved my friend's question, and that became the inspiration in the moment for this book. But I loved it because what I felt he was really saying was, I believe there are some kind of general things you could tell me that would actually be of assistance as I'm kind of swimming through the swamp full of alligators. And if you could come up with those, I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah. I remember an interview I conducted probably 15, 20 years ago. We were talking about similar aspects and platitudes. You know, and especially the one that comes up quite often is, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Right.
And I just thought, okay, thanks so much for that. I realize I am still alive, but that didn't help.
Right.
And the thought just occurred to me that the best thing, either sit in silence and an acknowledgement of the person, what they're going through, or you could at least say, what can I do to help?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So at least they know that there's somebody else there who maybe they can lean on a little bit, that type of thing.
Yes.
They can go to for some assistance, or at least somebody they can go to. And because I've had people come to me just venting.
Yes.
And I acknowledge the fact that that's all they're doing. So I don't have to fix it.
Right.
You know, I don't have to offer up.
That is the gift. The gift is to be present.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us, I'm Richard Dugan, and I am joined by Daphne Kingma. She's the author of the 10 things The 10 things to do when your life falls apart, or your teeth fall out of your mouth and your tongue doesn't work. It's an emotional and spiritual handbook. Again, do you go by Daphne Rose?
Just Daphne. Yeah.
And the book is available, obviously, at Amazon. We are linked to your website as well. Folks can go there and find out about you, about other books. You've written quite a number of books, primarily on relationships and getting along. And really, that's what we deal with on a day-to-day basis, is relationships. And you have one book that obviously deals with the ultimate relationship, and that is the one we have with self.
Yes. That's so huge, isn't it?
When we start talking about those issues of working through our stuff so that we can get unstuck and fulfill our dreams and our potential and our purpose and so forth, first of all, what is your best advice that you give to someone? And secondly, what's the first best step for someone to take?
About getting unstuck?
Getting
about
unstuck.
Loving the... Well...
It's all that mixed in, getting unstuck,
yes.
Loving oneself and so forth.
Well, I think the most important step is to pay attention to yourself. You know, so much of our lives are, so many things in our lives come in from outside. There's so much of an emphasis on our relationship with what's outside, what we have, what we're going after, who can make us happy, sad, or otherwise. And I think there is nothing so profound as self-awareness as a guiding experience for how to live life. It's like if you're not self-aware, you can't find peace, you can't find a relationship, you can't divine what your life purpose is, you can't pursue it, you can't offer your gifts. Self-awareness is critical even in going through a crisis because, of course, the question is, who is the person who's going through the crisis? What are this person's values? What is this person learning as he or she, the me in the story, is going through the anguish and the discovery and the awakening or the fear or the... I think that... Life is a journey of self-awareness. It's a journey in consciousness, and we're being asked through, you know, our life experience, both beautiful and challenging, to come more and more into this experience of self-awareness, into the experience of consciousness itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's always been true. You know, in the Middle Ages, people were bombarded with the bubonic plague or whatever plague they had. You know, it's like there was a lot going on out
Some
there.
Some plague always going on.
Yes. There are a lot of things that took their attention away from themselves. And I think we have it in a different way. We have this culture that is just endlessly stimulating us. It's like you can't even go to the gas station without having somebody yak at you and sell you something and play some music
that you now.
It's like shut up, you know, leave us alone. Give us some we live in a time in a world when, you know, the silence is something that it's a treasure. It's something we need to, you know, program in, you know, beg for, demand of ourselves, create for ourselves.
Silence, in my opinion, today is beyond golden.
Yes.
It is. It just,
yes.
I don't care if gold is $1,000 an ounce. Silence that opportunity. And I remember discussing this very issue as far as being marketed to constantly left and right and up and down, that when I sit out with my chickens in the run, they aren't doing that. And someone said, well, actually they are, because they're waiting for you to feed them or do this or that. But that's not the same.
Yes, that's
because
right.
I choose this. Mm-hmm. I chose to have these creatures in my presence, in my vicinity of my life, to care for them and harvest and do and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
That was my choice. And they went, well, but you chose to live in this society. No, I was born here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And even from a more metaphysical perspective, some would say, well, but you did. You had a contract before you came in, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gets kind of convoluted, but it is kind of semantics. But the fact of the matter is that there is no solicitation in science.
Yes, that's beautifully said. And I think that, you know, part of the reason we have crises is to invite us to discover that silence again, because everything mitigates against it in our culture. And there's nothing like something that really takes you apart to cause you to go inside and say, what is really important to me? What am I doing here? What in this whole morass of this experience is the one thing that I want to hold on to? And I think in these deeply challenging experiences, what people do come to is that there is something beyond and within all this cacophony that we're negotiating every day of our lives with our, you know, our human experience. And I'm not knocking our human experience,
no.
But I think we're just very bombarded. And of course, that is the spiritual challenge, to find the needle in the haystack of that cacophony, the needle of your own being, and the direction that it's pointing and that you want it to point.
What is it about relationships that is so intriguing to you that you've written so many books about it?
I just love relationships. I mean, I think I came to my passion for relationships by being born into quite a big family. And just, I can remember as a child sitting at the dining room table and just looking at all these people and thinking, what's going on with her? And why is, you know, and they're having an interesting conversation and wonder what happened to her at school today and wonder why she's being so mean and nasty this afternoon. But I think that, you know, I mean, I think some of these things are a gift that one has, and then there's an environment that draws it out. But I was very intrigued by the people in this family that I grew up in, and I had a father who was very aware about people, and I think kind of observing his interactions sort of fostered my own interest. And I think relationships are the profound experience that we have to engage with our capacity to love, to try it out, to learn about it, to learn about ourselves. I think it's such a beautiful crucible for, you know, emotional and spiritual consciousness. And so it always intrigued me. I never knew that I would end up writing all these books about relationships, but I got to working with people because I loved people and I loved that experience. And then it's always these people say to me, why don't you write a book about that? And I just, you know, I guess I hear the call and I can't resist.
Do you consider yourself an expert?
I do. I mean, that seems like a little...
Or to rephrase the question, what do you consider yourself, if not an expert?
I consider myself a visionary about relationships. I consider that I have the gift to see how they operate and what they mean and what we're asking from them, and to have vision about them, to have vision about them. I think I bridle at the word expert because I think it's a little presumptuous. You know, I think we're all in a process of discovery, even me. But I think that I can kind of sink into that intuitive vision, and that I'm so moved by the incredible transactions that we all have in our mm-hmm. relationships. It's just breathtaking.
Yeah. I think that the word expert falls under the same category with try. As Yoda would say, there is no try. You either do or you no do.
Right.
and I heard one guy say for expert, you are an expert only if you're dead. Because if you have all the information, what do you need to be here for?
Right. that's great. Yes.
The ultimate, we've talked about there's sort of a dichotomy between seeking out that silence we talked about before and seeking out the relationships and finding that balance.
Yes.
Which is extremely important because I've often said on many occasions on this program that if it were intended for us to be living solitary lives, there are certainly enough planets in the universe for each one of us to reside on one. However, the reality is we're all here together.
Yes.
So logic dictates to me that must mean that we have to coexist and learn how to live together.
Mm-hmm. And I think that is the great gift of our human experience. It's this great, emotional and spiritual playground, if you will. It's the matrix in which we get to discover ourselves. It's the, the Play-Doh, the Lego, that we
Tinker
get
Toys
to, yes.
that I grew up with.
Yes, exactly. and so there's this is the gift of this human embodiment experience, is that we get to discover and engage in all these ways.
Yeah.
And it's so exquisite. And I think these, bumps that come in the road are kind of continuing invitations for us to deepen that exploration and to see how we're related to other people, that we are not on that planet all by ourselves, but we're here to engage, we're here to love, we're here to see what is the mystery and the magic and the power of our connection with one another, and what is the energy of that, which I believe is love. That's what we ultimately discover through these connections.
Yeah, but then we avoid all that conflict and all of the pain and suffering if we're just living by ourselves.
Well, talking to many people who are living by themselves, as I do, there's a lot of anguish in that too, as we know.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, because of course living with yourself is also a relationship. It's like that's a very challenging relationship, and there's a lot of pain and sorrow when people aren't connected. I think there is this emotional longing to be connected, which is our, psychological personality that wants to have the human experience of engagement. We want to be healed from all the things we suffered when we were kids, and we want somebody to love us well, and we want to express ourselves. And I think it's also on a spiritual level. We want to come back into that place where we remember that we're part of a whole. And so there's a profound draw to connection in us. And I think that's the journey that we're on.
Mm. This question you've probably answered throughout the conversation that we've had thus far, but I'm going to ask the question so that you provide an answer to that question. And this question came to me about 2 months ago in the middle of an interview. And as these programs progress, I just ask the questions that come up. I have no, as you see, I have nothing in front of me. And the screen is nothing. This is text from your website.
It.
Okay.
I love it.
And the question would not go away. This isn't relevant to what we're talking about. I'm screaming in my head during the interview and it wouldn't go away. So I ask this question, and I have to preface it a little bit by saying that the question has to do with humanity's purpose, but from a very practical standpoint. And I use the space program as that example. It was the last time that any large number of human beings gathered together collectively for a positive, constructive goal. What do you see as humanity's? Why are we here? Do we want to be here in 50, 100, or 1,000 years? Where are we going? What are we going to do?
That's a big question, Richard. What is humanity's purpose? Wow, I like that. Let me see what I can do with that. It's like the girl who asked me at the end of her therapy session, I have one more question. Can you tell me the meaning of life? It's like, okay, I think we might need a little more time for that. I think our purpose is consciousness. Our purpose is to become aware of the energy that we are. the energy that we are, which is love, the energy that we are, which is all the words for it, God, divinity, love, communion, energy, light, that we are all infinitely connected through this energetic matrix mm-hmm. field, and that this is an experience. I think it's a beautiful experience. I think being a human being is kind of like being a kid who gets to go to a birthday party. It's like you can stay at home with your parents and you can live in the nice house and you can have your room and you can have your routines and everything. But if you go to a birthday party, you like get to experience some other things about yourself. You get to dress up and you get to, you know, be jealous that the kid got the present that you didn't get. And you get to meet a new friend and you get to come home with icing all over your clothes. And you get to feel spoiled when you go back into the experience of your family who didn't treat you as well as they treated you at the birthday party. And so I think this human engagement is like an opportunity to have a different experience of consciousness, an experience in which we feel the emotional texture of our being, and we experience the pull toward our spiritual consciousness of union and love, and we also feel the pull away from it. We see that we're not just entirely like that. We also, you know, are cranky and we have needs and we want to be spoiled and we want everything to be the way we want it to be and we want to have more than the other guy. And so I just think it's a beautiful experience on the way to that larger consciousness in which all these particulars are gradually dissolved. It's a birthday party. That's what I think.
Okay. All right, folks, humanity's purpose is to have a birthday party.
Come to the party. Here we are.
Absolutely. If you've just joined us, my guest is Daphne Akinmah. She's the author of an extraordinary book. I encourage you to pick it up. We're linked to her website, The 10 Things to Do When Your Life Falls Apart. I have to wonder, too, if that is sort of a subjective observation in as much as someone who goes through the death of a loved one views that as falling apart, whereas someone else who views the death of a loved one views it totally differently, doesn't look at it as falling apart.
Yes.
Is that one of the steps, or is that just more of individual observation and perception?
Perception in particular, and I think it's whether a person is coming from the personality level or from the soul level. The soul level always sees everything in our human experience, you know, our loss, our gain, our purpose, our mystery, our love, in terms of the larger purpose, the soul purpose, which is this unified consciousness, this place that we, you know, we abandon the particulars of the personality. And the personality, though, is dealing with all the psychological issues, with the pain of loss, with the desire for attachment, with the desire of desire, you know, with a human history, with a human context, with a life story. All these things are the property of the personality. And so the personality is the emotional part, and that's what feels, you know, and of course, you know, goes through all these feeling experiences. It's just a different frame. We're really a combination of both of those things, you know, and we can look through one lens or another at any given time, and neither is right nor wrong. It's just that, you know, I think, you know, I've never talked to a person who hasn't had some kind of experience of a transcendent state.
Mm-hmm.
If you really ask them about it, they will say, you know, that they've had love making that took them out to the galaxies, or they had a moment in nature that was breathtaking, or they felt connected to another person in a way that was a seamless, profound connection, or they were overwhelmed by the birth of their child, something. So we've all had transcendent moments, but we don't hang out there all the time.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, it's a place we visit, you know, except for enlightened beings who can be there or can go back and forth at will. I don't know. I haven't been enlightened lately either. but there's this, you know, it depends on which, you know, which framework we're holding our experience in at the moment.
Yeah. I am very grateful for the fact that we've had the opportunity, even though the program isn't quite over, of having you in the studio to talk about these things. And if one were to be able to achieve that level of awareness, they wouldn't need to concern themselves with those 10 steps. But the reality is that we might get glimpses every so often. I have to say that back in March, on March 1st of 2006, I think I could classify that as one of those moments where I wasn't in fear. It was, oh, I know what we can do. Mm-hmm. And we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at other times, thing happens and I don't know what to do. I'm gonna lose my mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We really go back and forth a lot.
But that means there is the opportunity to try to expand.
Yes.
Those
yes.
moments, and increase the frequency of those moments.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the bookends of this book, which begins with talking about crying and ends with talking about living in the light of the Spirit, which I think is the great opportunity of an experience of crisis, which is that we do have an opportunity to drop into or rise up to that place of, you know, incredible, profound tranquility and equanimity. It's like we're just kind of resting in the warm bath of our souls and knowing that everything is okay.
Yeah. You know, you talked about, I think the word was chaos, the hectic life.
Cacophony.
Thank you. Yes. Versus the silence. And there are days when I'm down here in Santa Barbara in the city and I'm loving it. But there comes a point, there's a breaking point where I was like, I need to get up that road to the top of the hill. I need to get away from this place.
Yes.
And it's like, don't speed and don't have us careen over the side, but get up that hill as fast as you can.
Yes.
Because there is that wanting, that need and desire. And right now, the need is to take a break. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay with us.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, you stand by. They want to get you a mail hold right now until they go, and they'll go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the greatest thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Tucked away at 7 East Anapamu, behind Sullivan Goss and American Gallery, just across the street from the Art Museum, the delightful Arts and Letters Cafe, Santa Barbara's most romantic restaurant, is now serving dinner in addition to its famous lunch menu. That's right. Now you can enjoy a la carte service and a full bar for dinner Wednesdays through Sundays in the secluded and enchanting privacy of the garden courtyard at the Arts and Letters Cafe, where Chef Cosmo Goss prepares fine California cuisine with an emphasis on fresh local seafood. Or for diners who want to enjoy the street scene in Santa Barbara's historic arts district, the Arts and Letters Cafe offers front porch dining with happy hour bar service and light fare. That's the Arts and Letters Cafe at 7 East Anapamu, where great food and great art combine for a wonderful dining experience for lunch and dinner.
Empties out as you go. Oh, walk with me, talk with me, tell me your story.
And understanding is what it's all about. And I think we're getting a better understanding of Daphne Kingma. And Daphne, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard. It's really a privilege.
One final question that I like to put to each of my guests as we get close to the end of the program. I remember asking one gentleman in the last 2 minutes, and he says, "Oh, great, you asked me this now? Why didn't you ask me this at the beginning of the program?" You could have done a lot of other things with your life, gone a lot of different directions. Why this? Why now?
Why this is because it just came to me, was called to me, because my path has been words. I love words. They've been a part of my life since the beginning. I feel like they're my offering in this life. It's always a joy to use them, to play with them, to convey meaning with them, to heal through them. And I think the why now I answered, it was very much inspired by this friend. And I'm always moved. I can remember even when I was a child, I used to write letters or make cards. And it was always like, you know, it's somebody's birthday or somebody's sick. I'm always so motivated by connection with other people. Mm. And so, of course, that connection with my friend became the, you know,
the catalyst.
Yes, the catalyst.
Yeah.
And the why now, definitely. Yeah.
Very cool. There was one area that we didn't really delve into too much, although I'm guessing we probably touched upon it numerous times, and that was something that is, you refer to as I think it's like the integral, the evolution of relationships.
Mm. Oh, boy, we could do hours on that.
and we very well may do that.
Well, I wrote a book called The Future of Love, rather, which is really about how relationships are changing. And I think they are changing in a way that is inviting us. The relationships are in crisis.
Yeah.
They are falling apart. They, you know, our structure of relationships are falling apart. And I believe that, too, is a crisis that is really inviting the expansion of the energy of love. It's like, are we here to preserve the structure? Are we here to keep these two people living in this house under the same roof, you know, with their marriage license signed in the locker box? Or are we here to have experiences with one another that are of communion and of depth and of honoring and of loving and of compassion and of healing? And so I think that is the evolution in our relationships right now.
I'm meeting more and more people who have been together for 20, 30, 40, 50 years who don't have that piece of paper.
Yes, yes.
Now, my parents just celebrated their 54th.
Wow.
And they
beautiful.
Have the piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And six kids to prove it. It's interesting. We're seeing a lot of social structures, plural, starting to decay, fall apart on an economic level.
Yes.
And religious, and again, and many other areas. And now you're saying the same thing was happening with the structural stability of relationships, but that doesn't mean that those relationships have to disappear.
No.
There's other ways of...
They're going through a convulsion of reforming, and that's very, just like a crisis, you know.
Yeah.
A personal crisis is very scary. This upheaval in the world of our relationships is very scary for us, because relationships are the place that we've really said, okay, you know, Wall Street may be going to hell in a handbasket, but by golly, our relationships are going to be okay. It's the place we've put a lot of emphasis for stability. So
absolutely,
it is very challenging.
I think Barbara Marx Hubbard used the best analogy, that in spite of the fact that from this side, a birth of a child is a beautiful, wonderful thing, to that infant coming through the canal and everything, that's extremely traumatic.
Yes.
So that's kind of what we're going through.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, go to richarddugan.com and check out the archives and this radio program. Love to Lal. Until next Saturday.